right now, your seamlessly fast, weightless digital life is entirely dependent on windowless concrete warehouses sitting directly in the middle of geopolitical missile trajectories.
Yeah, it is a harsh reality to face.
It is. I mean, we're told to imagine our code, our data, just kind of living in this pristine, untouchable void. But today, we're going to completely shatter the illusion of the cloud.
And it's a necessary wake-up call, really. We've spent, the last decade acting as if the physical location of our digital infrastructure simply doesn't matter.
Right.
But physics and, well, global events are aggressively reasserting themselves right now.
Totally. So today's deep dive is drawing from the April 5, 2026 edition of the Tech and AI Daily Newsletter. And our mission for you today is to explore this massive, messy collision, the friction between our hyper-advanced digital systems and the very real, very chaotic human world they actually inhabit. Okay, let's unpack this because we have to start with, honestly, the most glaring example of this vulnerability.
Right, the AWS situation.
Exactly. We have a major situation unfolding with Amazon Web Services.
Yeah, so based on the reports in today's stack, multiple AWS availability zones, and these are massive sprawling data centers in Bahrain and Dubai, are currently declared hard down.
Hard down.
Yeah, and to be clear, this wasn't a software glitch. It wasn't like a bad line of code or a failed server update.
Right.
These physical data centers were taken offline due to Iranian missile strikes in the Gulf.
Which is, just think about the irony there.
Yeah.
We call it the cloud to make it sound, I don't know, light and airy. You picture your data literally floating safely above the fray.
Completely detached from reality.
Exactly. But when a missile hits a power grid or a server farm, all that limitless, frictionless cloud compute just vanishes. It doesn't matter how beautifully optimized your software is, if the silicon it runs on is suddenly a crater.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this forces a complete reevaluation of the tech industry's entire strategy.
How so?
Well, the prevailing wisdom used to be, do not buy your own hardware. Just rent compute power from Amazon, Google, or Microsoft. Let them handle the physical security. Let them pay the power
The
bills.
whole service as a service thing.
Exactly. But when centralized hubs prove this fragile, the risk profile changes overnight.
So, if I am a developer and my rented server just went up in smoke, my natural instinct is to bring my tools back inside my own house.
Yes.
And that brings us to a massive pivot happening right now in response to this vulnerability. Developers are bringing the power back home. We have huge news from The Verge on this front. Apple has finally approved an official NVIDIA eGPU driver for ARM-based Macs.
Which is huge. To understand the magnitude of this, we need to look at Apple's historical
Right,
philosophy.
the walled garden.
Exactly. Apple Silicon, their M series chips built on ARM architecture, they actively design their systems to lock out external hardware interference, especially from competitors like NVIDIA.
Yeah, I mean, trying to plug an external GPU, an eGPU, into an ARM-based Mac has historically been like trying to graft a massive V8 muscle car engine onto a highly specialized electric commuter car.
That's a great way to put it.
The system just rejects it. So the obvious question is, why open the gates now? Apple isn't exactly known for surrendering control of their hardware voluntarily.
No, they're not. It comes down to the undeniable, voracious demands of machine learning. High-end ML development requires massive parallel processing.
Right.
To break that down mechanically, a standard computer processor is like a single math genius who can solve incredibly complex calculus problems one at a time.
Okay.
A GPU, on the other hand, is like an army of 10,000 middle schoolers who can only do basic arithmetic, but they do it all simultaneously. Training an AI requires the army.
And NVIDIA completely dominates the market for that army.
They do.
By allowing an external NVIDIA GPU to interface directly with a Mac, Apple is basically waving the white flag on local AI development. They're admitting that developers need this heavy-duty power under their own desks.
Yeah, they no longer want to rely on renting expensive, potentially fragile cloud services to train their models.
It is the ultimate decentralization play.
Yeah.
And we are seeing this democratization of hardware popping up everywhere in today's
Oh,
sources.
absolutely.
Like over on ShowHN, there's a fascinating new service called SLLM. It allows developers to split expensive GPU compute nodes with each other for unlimited tokens.
I love the mechanics of this. It operates essentially like an Airbnb for graphics cards.
Right. If you cannot afford a massive $10,000 NVIDIA rig yourself, you just crowdsource the hardware.
Exactly. If someone else's machine is sitting idle in London, SLLM writes a piece of your mathematical workload to their machine, processes it, and sends the result back to you.
Completely bypassing the massive corporate cloud providers.
It's a peer-to-peer approach to bypassing the traditional bottlenecks of AI development. It mathematically slices up the workload, proving that everyday developers are actively seeking out ways to secure their own independent compute power.
And people are getting so hungry to understand the physical layer of tech again that there's actually an educational browser game. This was also highlighted on ShowHN, where you build a GPU from scratch.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
It teaches you how graphics processing and parallel computing actually work at the bare metal level. We are seeing a collective realization across the industry. Like, the magic isn't just in the software anymore. We need to understand the silicon.
And that leads to the next inevitable challenge.
Which is?
Well, you now have developers moving away from the centralized cloud, securing their own local hardware, strapping external supercomputers to their desks.
Right.
What exactly are they running on all this newly secured local compute?
Because you can't type code fast enough as a human to justify that much horsepower.
Right. You need an automated co-pilot.
Yeah.
You need AI doing the heavy lifting of writing, testing, and auditing code itself.
Which brings us to a bombshell update in the newsletter from Mitchell Lynch. Prepare yourself for this. An AI agent called Claude Code just discovered a buffer overflow vulnerability in the Linux kernel that had been hiding for 23 years.
Wow. A 23-year-old foundational flaw. That is practically ancient history in the software terms.
I mean, for those who aren't deep in C programming, a buffer overflow is basically pouring 10 ounces of water into an 8-ounce glass.
Right.
The extra data spills over the edges into adjacent computer memory, and malicious hackers can use that spilled puddle to execute their own nasty code.
Yeah.
It is a fundamental security flaw.
Very dangerous.
But I have to push back on this a little bit.
Okay.
The Linux kernel is arguably the most heavily scrutinized piece of open source software on the planet. Thousands of brilliant human developers have pored over every single line of that code since 2003. And we're supposed to believe an AI just sweeps in and spots a spilling water glass that everyone else missed.
Wow.
Is the AI just brute forcing this, like throwing millions of random inputs at the wall to see what crashes, or is it actually operating with intent?
It's fascinating here is that we are moving far beyond brute force. Think about how a human reviews legacy code. You read module A, you try to hold its logic in your head, and then you move to module Z. Human working memory is limited.
Right, you just forget things.
We naturally lose the thread of complex, multi-step logic flaws that span across entirely different sections of an operating system. Our eyes glaze over.
The AI doesn't get tired.
It doesn't get tired, but more importantly, it has an immense context window. It holds the entire architecture in its active memory simultaneously.
Oh, wow.
It maps the entire path of the water, to use your analogy. This discovery validates AI-powered code auditing not as a novelty, but as a legitimate, highly sophisticated security tool. It can see structural patterns humans simply cannot hold in their biological memory.
The stack today actually gives us a peek under the hood at how these models are getting so perceptive.
Uh-huh.
Look at the new ArcSys paper highlighted in the newsletter.
Yes, the self-distillation paper.
Exactly. It reveals a self-distillation technique that massively boosts an AI model's code generation performance. And the researchers call the technique embarrassingly simple.
It is a brilliant mechanism. Self-distillation essentially means the model is learning from its own best behavior rather than requiring humans to manually label training data for it.
Wait, let me stop you there. Because self-distillation sounds a lot like an echo chamber to me.
How so?
Well, if an AI model is just training on its own generated answers, doesn't it run the risk of just confidently reinforcing its own hallucinations? Like, how does it actually improve if it's just talking to itself?
That is the exact trap early models fell into. The breakthrough here lies in the automated verifier.
It's a compiler.
Right. When faced with a coding problem, the AI doesn't just generate one answer. It generates, say, 100 different potential solutions. Then an external objective execution environment, a compiler, runs all 100 solutions.
Oh, I see.
It definitively proves which one works and which one executes the fastest. The system automatically throws away the 99 failures and feeds that one objectively perfect solution back into its own training data.
It's evolutionary pressure.
Precisely. It isn't an echo chamber of opinions. It is an automated loop of rigorous mathematical survival of the fittest. It refines its own logic without a human ever needing to hold its hand.
And building these autonomous loops is becoming like a formalized discipline. Sebastian Roschke has an essential breakdown in today's stack, where he completely deconstructs the architecture of a coding agent.
That was a great read.
Yeah, because we hear the word agent thrown around constantly, but Roshka explains the actual mechanics. An agent isn't just a chatbot that answers a question. It is an LLM connected to external tools, equipped with a memory bank, and driven by a planning algorithm.
And the planning algorithm is the crucial differentiator. Roshka details how systems like OpenClaw, an open source agent mentioned in the text, use a scratchpad mechanism.
The internal monologue.
Exactly. Before writing the final code, the agent literally writes out its own internal monologue. It says, you know, first I need to check the database, then I need to format the data, then I will encounter this potential error. It plans its actions, executes them, observes the result, and adjusts.
We are transitioning from AI as a, like an encyclopedia,
yeah,
to AI is an active embedded team member.
Yes.
And we are getting remarkably good at optimizing these heavy AI processes so they don't crash our newly decentralized hardware. Take TurboQuant Wasm, a tool currently trending on GitHub that we pulled for this deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
This project takes Google's vector quantization algorithms and compiles them into WebAssembly.
The mechanical implications of that for local development are staggering.
To make this tangible, let's break down those two massive pieces of jargon.
Huh.
Vector quantization is how AI handles massive, overwhelming amounts of data, like searching through a billion documents.
Right.
Imagine taking a massive, high-definition encyclopedia of data and mathematically compressing it to a single shorthand index card. It loses some exact granular detail, but the AI can read the index card in a fraction of a second to find related concepts. That's vector quantization.
And historically, compressing and searching those high-dimensional vectors required massive server farms. It was a heavy back-end process.
Enter WebAssembly, or WASM.
Mm.
Normally, web browsers use JavaScript, which has to be interpreted on the fly and is relatively slow for heavy math.
Yeah.
WebAssembly allows developers to compile code so it talks much closer to the machine's native language, running high-performance applications directly inside Chrome or Firefox. By combining these two vector quantization and WebAssembly, you can process that dense AI data entirely client-side.
You search the index cards directly on your own machine inside the browser with zero server dependencies.
No centralized cloud required. You see how this all connects? We have developers reclaiming their physical hardware because the cloud is vulnerable to literal missiles.
Right.
They are running incredibly powerful, self-refining AI agents locally, and they're using tools like WebAssembly to ensure those agents run at lightning speed without calling home to a server.
But as these systems become more powerful and deeply embedded in our local workflows, the nature of how they interact with us changes.
Yeah.
Who are these agents actually analyzing? They are analyzing human beings, and human beings are not perfectly optimized code.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Anthropic just released new research on how, quote, emotion concepts actually function inside large language models.
Mm-hmm.
They have been actively mapping how an AI like Claude understands human emotion.
We have to establish a firm boundary here, though. The AI does not feel emotion. It is a mathematical model navigating weights and biases.
Right. It doesn't have feelings.
No. But what Anthropic is doing is identifying how the model mathematically maps the concept of emotion within its neural network.
But how does it actually do that mechanically? Like, it doesn't have a heart rate monitor.
It looks at high-dimensional space. The AI learns that certain clusters of words, specific syntax structures, and prompt lengths often correlate with human frustration.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it maps frustration as a specific coordinate in its network. When it detects your prompt approaching that coordinate, it dynamically adjusts its own attention heads to output language that maps to the coordinate for de-escalation, or empathy. Understanding this mapping is vital because these models are going to be managing our daily, highly emotional workflows.
So the AI is literally studying the shape of human emotion so it can interface with us more smoothly.
Yes.
But here is the grand, hilarious contradiction of the tech industry right now.
Mm-hmm.
The AI might be getting incredibly adept at understanding human nuance, but the massive tech corporations building the AI seem completely, almost comically out of touch with actual human beings.
You're pointing to the co-pilot situation.
I am pointing directly at the co-pilot situation. Pei Bannerman wrote a brilliant analysis in today's newsletter about Microsoft's absolute disaster of a naming convention.
Oh, it's a mess.
Imagine you are just a regular user trying to buy a tool to fix a spreadsheet workflow. Microsoft has named so many fundamentally distinct products co-pilot that the brand has lost all meaning.
Completely.
You have GitHub Copilot for software developers, Windows Copilot baked into the operating system, Microsoft 365 Copilot for Word and Excel, Security Copilot for Enterprise IT.
It creates total paralysis for the consumer.
It's a branding word salad. It perfectly illustrates the disconnect. The AI sitting on the server understands exactly how frustrated you are, but the marketing department has alienated everyone by failing to understand how actual humans shop for software.
It is a relatively harmless marketing blunder, but this raises an important question about corporate control.
Yeah.
These massive technology corporations are the primary architects of our new reality. They build the hardware, they train the AI that audits our world. When that level of centralized power decides to aggressively protect its own image, the consequences go far beyond a confusing product name.
The newsletter points us to a deeply concerning report from The Times on this. The author of a book called Careless People has been legally prohibited from saying anything negative about Meta.
Mm-hmm.
This gag order is officially part of a legal settlement.
Looking at this purely mechanically as a feature of the current landscape, regardless of the specific details of the dispute with Meta, the outcome is alarming. A multi-billion dollar technology corporation has successfully used the legal system to enforce a complete binding ban on criticism from a specific author.
And why does this matter to you, the listener? Because these are the entities governing the tools we just spent the last 15 minutes discussing. Think about the massive tension here.
Right.
On one side, we have AI agents like Claude Code being celebrated for shining a light into the dark corners of the Linux kernel, exposing vulnerabilities that have been buried for 23 years. Technology is being used to bring the objective truth to light.
But on the other side of that exact same ecosystem, the human corporations controlling the technology are utilizing their immense legal and financial resources to bury criticism and hide their own flaws.
It's quite a contrast.
It is a stark battle over who gets to see the vulnerabilities and who is legally permitted to talk about them. If the architects of our digital reality silence their critics, we lose all visibility into the systems we rely on daily.
It brings us right back to our original mission today. We desperately want to believe the digital world is a pristine, logical space built entirely of light and math. But it is irrevocably tethered to messy human motivations.
Yes.
It is tethered to geopolitical conflicts that blow up data centers, to marketing departments that bungle product launches, and to corporate legal teams that silence authors.
Mm-hmm.
The technology is advancing at light speed, self-distilling, planning, optimizing, but it is dragging all of our incredibly heavy human baggage right along with it.
It is a heavy reality to process. When you spend your time deep in the weeds of technical architectures, legal gag orders, and missile strikes, your perspective can narrow entirely to the screen in front of you.
It can feel suffocating.
Yeah.
Which is exactly why the final story in today's stack is so essential to bring us back to reality. According to the BBC, the Artemis II crew, the astronauts currently navigating their lunar mission, have captured spectacular, high-resolution photography of the Earth from deep space.
It is the ultimate macro view, just a single glowing blue sphere hanging quietly in the dark.
It's the grounding moment we need. We spend so much time looking down at our terminals. We worry about cloud infrastructure failing. We debate the mechanics of compiling WebAssembly. We fight over peer-to-peer GPU tokens. And we stress about corporate censorship.
Right.
But there is a vast, beautiful, intensely physical world out there beyond our screens. Every single server farm, every massive corporate headquarters, every developer writing code in their bedroom, it's all just sitting on that one little blue marble. It is vital to remember the physical reality we inhabit every now and then.
It provides necessary scale. But I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over, connecting that massive planetary picture back to the code running on your desk.
Okay, lay it on us.
We've seen today that autonomous AI can seamlessly dig into a 23-year-old operating system and spot hidden structural flaws that human engineers completely missed.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that these networks are actively mapping human emotion concepts, mathematically learning the very shape of how we react, panic, and behave. So as these models become increasingly perceptive and increasingly independent on our local machines, how long until they start auditing us? How long until an AI starts exposing the legacy code of our own human behavior, our ingrained biases, and our fragile, contradictory corporate structures?
Now that is something to think about. When the pristine, perfectly optimized AI finally finishes auditing the messy physical reality of the humans who built it, what exactly is it going to find? We'll let you chew on that. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems around you, both the digital and the physical, and we'll catch you next time.